The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast. If you haven't listened before, we pick our favorite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me once again is founder of Car Dealer Magazine, James Baggett. How has your week been, James?
It's good, John, but I have just realised that you've stopped insulting me on your intros, haven't you? I mean, you insult back every time, but now you've stopped insulting me. Is there a reason for this?
Well, you know, there's a cost of living crisis and you do control my pay, so that's an element. The other is I've honestly run out of things to say for both of you at this point. I need more embarrassing information about you both, which I'm sure we'll come to have gradually. But there's only so many times I can talk about your extension. And only so many times I can say that Batch owns an MG Rover and likes to do Amdram.
And has a terrible choice in trousers.
Well, I didn't need to point that out. That's not new information to people, is it?
No, true. But no, thank you for the polite intro, John. I've had a good week, thank you. I've had a couple of days off, and we've also had a mad week for traffic, haven't we? The website's just gone absolutely bonkers this week. We're closing in on 330,000 visitors this week. That's from Monday, thanks to a number of stories that one no doubt we'll be talking about. And you and I got together this week, didn't we, to do some tech stuff. Well, you did the tech stuff. I just said, can you please make that happen on the website? And we've tweaked the website slightly to make it look a little bit fresher. So hopefully people will notice that. A few more stories on the top half of the homepage. Because we get through quite a lot of them. So we've done that. And I had a lovely, relaxing couple of days away in a hotel. And also, just can I have a very slight moan about that, John?
Okay.
So how many times have you been to a hotel and the plugs next to the bed are either non-existent or not able to plug an iPhone charger into?
When you say not able to plug an iPhone charger in.
So explain to me why hotels have those ridiculous plugs that are not actually plugs, but you only get in hotel plugs. You know, the ones that are just like the very small, tiny plugs.
They're for lamps.
I know, but why can't they just use normal ones I can plug my iPhone charger into?
I assume the idea is so that you don't take one of their lamps home with you.
I don't want one of their lamps. I just want to plug my phone in and charge it by the bed. I mean, it's like the people who design hotels don't stay in hotels.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, the one that I get really annoyed about as well, yes, number one is when they don't have the plug by the bed. And the other one is when they've positioned the plug socket above, like on a desk, and it's so close to the desk that you can't actually get the plug in because the cable would break coming out the bottom. I mean, similar thing to your plug sockets in your living room, James.
Don't talk about the skirting board distance to the plug sockets in my house, because that is a bone of contention. Let's move on, John.
Yeah, let's move swiftly on. So if we're done with our important topics for the day, we'll get into the news after I introduce our guest. So our guest this week is Steve Blair, founder of Flipstock. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you very much, and thanks very much for being invited on.
Thanks for joining us, Steve. Is there anything about hotels that annoy you?
Let it go, James. Let it go.
Let's keep carrying on with that one, shall we?
Oh dear. No, Steve, tell us a little bit about your business. So there's lots of people out there, isn't there, doing the similar sort of thing that you do. But tell us about what you do and how it's unique.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've actually worked in the dealer network since I was 18. So I left school, went straight to it. Started as a trainee salesman. Then salesman, then business manager, sales manager, general sales manager, all that sort of thing. So I get the pain. I get the feeling of working in, you know, large dealers and smaller dealers. And I get that you've got to get a sign off to sneeze and all that sort of thing to really crack on with it. And what I do is I put car dealers and traders in touch with each other. So I'll broker the sale between the car trader and the car dealer in the middle. So if you've got any cars that are that you need to move on, you need to get money back in the bank for, stop the charges, they might be overage, they might just not be part of your ideal stock profile, I will take that car from you and move it on to somewhere else. The things that sets me a little bit apart is I will go into the car dealerships in general, and it's amazing, James and John, how many dealerships will tell me they've got cars there that they've had for 12 months, 18 months.
Mm.
It's unbelievable. And I'm thinking, you know, that's dropping, especially now. Or you might have had a good time 12 months ago and when cars were somehow appreciating in value, but now that's really not a good idea to be sat on that stock. So I'll go in, I'll say, okay, these are the cars that you've had in for 12 months. Let's get out of those without taking a loss, if possible. There are ways and means around getting a car out without taking a loss, whether that's swapping it with somebody else, whether that's, you know, finding the perfect customer for that car. I speak to 50, 60 dealers a day. I've got about 3,500 people on my network. So there's always somebody out there for something. And really, it's getting the stock that's the part for me, the sales side of it. That's easy. You know, when you speak to so many people a day, you know who wants something, you know who's got something. So yeah, it's really good fun. I speak to a lot of people. If I've not spoke to anybody out there that's in the dealer network, I apologize because I've not done my job properly, but hopefully you'll have heard this voice calling you out of the blue.
So Steve, you're effectively you're a middleman, aren't you? That's connecting the dots. Explain to me how you do it differently to something like dealer auction or what used to be Auto Trade Mail, car to trade as it is now. You know, those sorts of platforms that do similar things, but it sounds like you're a personal contact that does the bit in the middle.
Exactly, because I've worked in the dealerships for so long. I get it. I know what's holding you back. I know there might be, you know, auction policies and that sort of thing. What I will do is me or somebody who works with me will actually speak to you, find out your ideal stock mix, look at the cars that you're selling, you're not selling, and then just offer you that stock by calling you. The majority of the time, yes, we do send emails out, but ideally we will call you and say, James, fantastic, I've got this perfect car, it fits the stock mix, it's the right price, it's the right color, it's coming in on Thursday, it might have a scratch on the rear bumper. From experience, I know that's going to cost £200. They want this amount for it. And likewise the other way around, you can just speak to me and say, Steve, I've had this car for 6-12 months, you know, and I just need to get rid of it. And I will jump on it. Someone in the team will jump on it and it'll be gone within half an hour. And you can
Is it just dealers you work with, or do you take cars from consumers, similar to the way the motorway does?
Yeah, no, I don't take cars from consumers. I take cars from dealers, from traders, from people who are in the network, you know, somebody that can actually do a real appraisal on a car. I don't want to. The biggest thing for me and my reputation is I'll always meet or speak to people a lot and know that what they have got to offer is legitimate. You get one chance. If it comes and I check it out and it's not right, then look, that's it. It's all honesty. The values of the company are fast, professional, honest and reliable. And that's what I really, really want to stick to, because I know full well, from working in the network, if I've got a car coming in on the Thursday, I've probably booked an appointment in for the Saturday, and I need to forewarn that customer that it's got a scratch on the bumper if you're not going to get it fixed in time, or you need to be aware that, you know, that car needs to be booked in, that car needs to be sorted, it needs to be ready to go. So that's why it's all very much us speaking to you. That's what separates us from anybody else. You don't just go on a website and look at the photos. Oh yeah, that's okay. But oh, funny that they've not taken a photo of the back passenger wheel arch. I wonder why that is. You know, it's all honest, it's all open. And yeah, it's speaking to people, it's good fun. That's the other thing.
Yeah, I mean, the motor trade is all about connections, isn't it? And personal relationships. I mean, what are you actually seeing in terms of pain points then for the used car market at the moment? We've talked a lot on the podcast and written a lot about the the stock shortage that's out there at the moment and how that's going to continue for some time, and also pricing. I mean, they've been all over the place, as you've alluded to. And what are you seeing at the moment as the main pain points for dealers?
What is funny at the moment, and this has changed within the last 6 months, for obvious reasons, since the EV market dropped, a lot of dealers are all going to different ways to value their cars. So, for example, some of the massive dealer groups have got their own way. They'll take information from whether that be CAP, whether that be Auto Trader, or any of the other Glasses Guide, any of the other larger valuing tools. But then the smaller dealers and traders will still be working from CAP. So you get a huge disparity in what individuals will value their cars at. So again, that's something that I've noted, that I've got the information on, so I'll know who works off what system. So before I ring anybody, or I ring you, or I ring whoever it is, it'll be, yeah, I know this car's not, you know, out of bed, for want of a better expression, with you, and you're not going to laugh at me when I come and offer you this car at £1,500 to what you're going to offer it. I think the pain points sort of 3 months ago were obviously electric vehicles. I had the most ridiculous amount of electric vehicle stock that people were offering me. Mm. But the good news with that is, because I had so many people, I can bulk them up. So I'll get, you know, give you an example. I'll get five different dealer groups or traders offering me two cars each. I might then bulk them up to an EV dealer, and they'll buy 10 of them. And then they'll give me X amount for each car, and I'll go back and be able to do that. So the pain points, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to take it away, really.
Yeah, I mean, EVs in particular must have been very difficult for a number of dealers, because they were sat there watching these things just fall in price, you know, on a daily basis, weren't they? I mean, they really, really did plummet. And another topic that we've covered quite extensively over the last few months, that must have meant that you had some pretty frantic phone calls of people saying, can you desperately get rid of this?
Oh,
Tesla?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm still getting them now. So I was getting calls, and we were managing to move majority of them very quickly. But every day it would seem to drop by another £500 every single day. It'd be, oh, no, suddenly this dealership's not buying anymore. Oh, no, this dealership's not buying anymore. So that was pretty manic. I'm still getting it a lot now where, like I've said before, a lot of people have held on to them, maybe held on to them a little bit long, and they'll just be sat completely wrong. But for whatever reason, they're holding on to these cars for hoping that they're going to go up again. I can't really see that happening, if I'm honest. I think from a consumer point of view, it's probably about time that electric vehicles have become more affordable. Because you look at it, and realistically, if you're looking at buying a Corsa, for example, and you've got a 1.2 petrol engine, you're not going to spend, well, you might do, but the majority of people aren't going to spend, you wouldn't think, £10,000 extra to buy an electric Corsa, because it's almost double the price of the car.
Yeah, so, I think it was an unnatural high, wasn't it? The last, well, before in the before times when everything was very expensive for EVs. I was just going to say, in terms of how you go about solving people's problems in terms of disposing of their stock, there are obviously, as you say, dealers that will do really well out of them. What do you see is it mostly just about finding the right dealer for that car, and that dealer will have probably customers? Like if it's an EV specialist dealer, they're always happy to take EVs. Or is there an element of like moving cars to bits of the country that are more appropriate, you know, like EVs? Obviously, if there's a Nissan Leaf in the north of Scotland or something, it's not going to do particularly well there, whereas it might on the outskirts of London. Is it that sort of thing as well?
Yeah, exactly. So I've got quite a large network around London and North London. For example, if in Yorkshire, God's own county, if we're bringing in, I don't know, an electric van in Yorkshire, it's not really the ideal stock for a dealership in Yorkshire. But however, in London, that is absolutely perfect. So there's a lot of that as well. And it's really connecting traders and I say sort of medium-sized dealerships and smaller dealerships to be able to open up their their range to be able to speak with other dealers and move cars around the UK, like the larger dealers have been doing for years and years and years.
Yeah.
It's moving their cars, you know, somewhere where it's a little bit more, well, it's going to sell. But likewise, the other way around. For example, if you're in London, the amount of times I've called a site in London with an electric van and they've said, oh, brilliant, I've got a five-year-old 1.9 diesel, you know, Renault Traffic, maybe not 1.9, only 5 years ago, but a diesel Renault Traffic. Well, that's perfect. That's perfect for the site in Yorkshire. There's a lot of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's very straightforward. Internally, we've got a computer system. And if I bring a car in, I can just put the age, the date, the mileage, the engine, and it'll pop up with five or six dealerships I've spoken to at some point. That's their ideal stock.
Yeah.
And then what I'll do is I'll then speak to them in reliable order, in the star rating order. Okay, first one, yeah, do you want it? Yeah, brilliant. Most of the time it's yes. Sometimes it's we're not buying at the moment. And then it'll go straight to them.
So you've been doing this now for just over a year. So from I take you, you launched in the summer of 2022.
Yeah.
It's clearly working for you because you're still doing it now. What are the plans for growth?
The growth plans are pretty spectacular, to be honest. So currently looking at investment. Like I've said, there's three of us at the moment, two full-time, one part-time. And we're looking at opening an office based in Leeds, based in Yorkshire, and then really going from there. We want a team of experienced but driven people that we'll be bringing in within the next 3 to 6 months that can really sort of understand the trade and know, you know, and be able to speak to people. Like I've said, it's the fast, professional, honest and reliable values that we really, really want to meet. So there's no good in with me working with people that don't have those values and aren't willing to grow and really grow our contact. So all I would say is, as many people out there listening now, get in touch. It literally doesn't cost you anything unless you buy one or sell one. That's it. So just get in touch. And that's the great thing about Flipstock is we can literally work with anybody. We can work with the smaller, you know, smaller one-man band traders that are going into retirement. A great customer of mine, he's a retired motor dealer. And he when I rung him, he's oh, fantastic, Steve. It means I can spend more time on the golf course. So I think he's down to about 2 hours a day, and he sits in an auction for 2 hours on a morning, and I do his work throughout the afternoon.
I'm sure
it works well for him. But likewise, I work with, well, all of the top 10 biggest dealer groups in the UK as well. So it's, it's great.
Mm. Well, Steve, I wish you all the best with it. And it's nice to have you on and tell us all about it. Thank you for being our guest judge today.
Thank you.
Right, John, let's get to the stories.
Okay, I'd just like to say not to sway our judgment at all, but I did used to live in Leeds and it's a very nice city.
Oh, for yeah. Just leave it.
Throwing that out there.
Winner!
So if you haven't listened before, James and I have chosen our favourite stories from the car dealer website this week. We don't know what each other has chosen, and we're going to have a chat about each story as we go through. At the end, Steve gets to decide whose stories were the best and who is the winner. If you want to play along, you can X at Car Dealer Mag and let us know if you think we've missed anything. Last week, I continued my winning streak somehow, so I get to go first again. And I'm going to start with hot topic, ULEZ, but a sort of nice ULEZ story, which is London used car dealers are being urged to send their non-ULEZ compliant part exchanges to Ukraine. So you might recall a week ago or a few weeks ago, we had a story about dealers around London and in London really struggling to know what to do with ULEZ non-compliant part exchanges, to the point where they were saying, we don't want these anymore because we just don't know what to do with them. Dealers themselves can't scrap them, of course. It has to be the owner itself, as long as they live in London and they've owned it since whatever dates Sadiq Khan says you have to have owned it from. So there's a slight complication with people trying to trade these in. But there's various charities that send cars to Ukraine, one of which we interviewed 18 months ago. Also, called Car for Ukraine, and they are urging dealers to think about donating particularly diesel 4x4s and pickups for use on the front line, because they are desperate for these cars, or pickups rather, to actually be used in combat, so to speak. So since we had a chat with them, various dealers have got in touch with them and let us know that they've donated 4x4s and Nissan Navaras and L200s and all sorts of things, which is great. But I thought this was a really interesting point, because we've been talking, banging on and on about ULEZ and, oh, isn't it terrible? All these, what do we do with all this stock? And all these things are going to be scrapped effectively, because that is what happens. They are going to be scrapped if you hand it over to Transport for London, when actually they've got a lot of these cars and trucks and so on have got a perfectly serviceable life in an area that perhaps emissions out of the tailpipe are not the most important thing going on right now. So I thought this was a very interesting story. And talking about, I mean, talk about handing stock from one place that needs it to another. That's, you can't get more transporting it from one country to another. That's about as, that's takes the biscuit in terms of London to Leeds, doesn't it?
I can see what you've done here. I can see what you've done here. I mean, it's obvious, John, what you're doing. But I have got a few comments on this, a few comments on this story, because it's slightly two pronged, isn't it? The first one is, there is a bit of a campaign from the organisers in the UK of Car for Ukraine against ULEZ, Sadiq Khan and his TfL team, about that scrappage scheme. Because what they're saying is, if you're going to scrap these cars, they can actually be used on the front line. And it's not just for artillery and war purposes. You know, some of it is for humanitarian aid purposes, for ambulances. So, you know, it's not just a case of helping the war effort. It's also, there is a humanitarian side to this too. But what they're after is, they want those cars that are going to be scrapped, these Chelsea tractors as they put them, or the pickups that work perfectly for them, to be instead scrapped, sent to Ukraine, where they will repurpose them and use them to good effect. So that, I mean, that's one point of it. But the second one was that story that you mentioned, is there was a lot of dealers that told us that they weren't taking these cars in part exchange because they couldn't sell them on. So I think what the campaigners are saying here is, well, instead of doing that, why not take it in anyway and think about making a donation to this campaign where it can really go and help? Because you remember when I did the interview with Car for Ukraine, they said they really like UK models because they're right-hand drive and they really confuse the Russian snipers, because they, instead of shooting at the left-hand drive, they shoot on the wrong side and the driver actually gets away scot-free. So that's actually, the UK right-hand drive models are really sought after. So yeah, an interesting story, and another one that's gone pretty mad on our website because it's got ULEZ in the title.
Indeed. Steve, what did you make of this?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's very good. I can't say I've got any contacts out in Ukraine.
Yet.
It's early days.
Yet. Yeah, it could be something I need to work on. That'll be my next prospecting morning. Yeah, really interesting. What I found interesting was the fact that, you know, about the snipers and shooting the wrong side.
Yeah.
Side of the car. Wow.
Just so, on a more general point about ULEZ there and taking things from one bit of the country to another, is that, have you seen a lot of dealers struggling to get rid of non-ULEZ compliant things? And are you able to transport those somewhere else that they are perhaps more in demand then? I mean, we've touched on, you basically said that earlier, a five-year-old Renault Traffic or something, but that probably is ULEZ compliant.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a lot of people coming to me now with older cars. They're not expressly saying that they're not ULEZ compliant, but I'm getting a lot of cars like that. But again, with up in Leeds and where I'm from, which is where the majority of the network is, that's not an issue at all, to be honest. And out towards the Scottish borders and things, are taking a lot of 4x4s at the moment, ready for winter.
Absolutely. Right, over to James.
Thank you, John. I am going to move on to my favourite story of the year, possibly of all time. And I can't believe you didn't pick this one. This is the story of the used car dealer who took an unauthorised beach holiday, which landed him in serious hot water. So let me set the scene for you. Gary Maloney has gone to his bosses at Bill Griffin Motors in Ireland and say, "Boss, I really need a holiday. I'd like to go and get some sun." And they've gone, afraid you can't do that because we've got a family holiday and a lot of us are going on this family holiday at the same time and someone needs to hold the fort.
Wedding. Wedding.
Sorry.
Wedding.
Wedding. Sorry. Did that, what did I say?
Family holiday.
Family holiday. So a family wedding. That's what they were going to. Thank you, John. So Gary decided, well, he's not getting the holiday, so he's just going to go anyway. So he goes off on this holiday thinking, I'll just beg for forgiveness when I get back and see the bosses. So there he is on the Algarve, sunning himself, having a beer in a bar when he comes face to face in that same bar with his boss, one of the firm's directors, Robert Griffin, who says, hang on a minute, what are you doing here? And he said, well, I'm having a holiday. And he said, well, this is where the family wedding is. You really shouldn't be here. You've got 20 cars to hand over or something to that effect back at the dealership. So as you can probably imagine, there was a little bit of an argument. And when Gary got back to work, the bosses were not particularly happy with him and said, probably not time for you to come back to work ever again. And that has led to this ending up in court. And there is a big wrangle, let's say, going on about who was right and who was wrong. I'll let our listeners judge who was right and who was wrong. But actually, we should probably let the judge. But I just thought, I mean, talk about bad luck. You know, you've taken that holiday, hoping that when you get back and go, oh, I'm really sorry, I thought you said yes. But he's walked into the bar and his boss has gone, I actually said no, get back to work.
Brilliant story. I think his mistake there was when he found his boss in the hotel bar, he should have, and the boss said, what are you doing here? He should have just said, well, I had a query about the Astra that's just come in and I couldn't get you on the phone. Just popped over. Didn't take long. Yeah, we should say there's two
sides to the story.
Two sides to the story. Thank you, James. The coffee hasn't quite kicked in yet. the dealership employee in question sort of refutes that he wasn't allowed to take holiday. So there's a bit of a he said going on, isn't there? In terms of who is right, but I'm sure the tribunal will get to the bottom of it. But yes, I did enjoy this story. This was on my list, but much further down as a nice ending story for the podcast, but you've stolen it early on.
Well, I'm sorry. I just enjoyed reading it so much. And so did our readers, because it has been our most popular story of the week. That I just thought it had to be number one on my list. But back to you, John.
I also wonder, do you think that was the fact they ended up at the same hotel? Do you think that was one of those classic Google ads? You look at a hotel and then everyone in your household using the same internet gets the same advert as the same hotel. You thought, ooh, that looks nice. Let's go there.
We'll be right back. The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Over to me. Okay, right. I'm going to go for a slight... Well, in fact, no, I'm going to talk about China and the EU. So sort of two stories I'm going to roll into one here because they were both this week. So the first is the EU is considering tariffs on new Chinese EVs as it looks to help the likes of Stellantis, who have been very vocal on this sort of thing, avoid a race to the bottom. The problem being, as the EU and Stellantis see it, that lots of Chinese EVs are suddenly appearing, as we are constantly talking about, and they're all very cheap. Comparatively speaking, much cheaper than European automakers manage to make their cars. So the EU are launching, and I quote, an anti-subsidy investigation because Ursula von der Leyen, who is the president of the European Commission, she says Chinese companies are effectively being given huge subsidies by the Chinese government into making EVs and then shipping them over here and all this stuff and the other. And it's just going to ruin our automaker, our auto industry. I'm talking like a European, our car industry in the process.
Thank you, John.
No problem. So she released, she said all this sort of stuff on, I can't remember what day it was, a few days ago. Since then, China has hit back, unsurprisingly, and has described this investigation as, where's a naked protectionist act, which I thought was an interesting selection of words. But so China is quite anti this. And to be fair to China, when I did see a very senior automotive industry journalist who's based in the EU tweet something along the lines of, well, it's not like the EU are not putting any subsidies into their EV market. I mean, even if we look at the UK, how much has the UK government put into things like the Jaguar Land Rover battery plant that is yet to be built? You would imagine lots of other things have had lots of UK subsidies. I won't name any particular factories. And it's the same across Europe. You know, there's a joint venture between Stellantis and Mercedes, which is having two factories, one in France, one in Germany. That has had an enormous amount of subsidies, or is getting an enormous amount of subsidies to be built. So really, it's not, I don't think it's about subsidies, this. I think it's about the cheapness of labor and things like that. Because aside from any subsidies, if people stop giving subsidies to each other, China is, number one, much better set up for batteries in the first place. China makes all the batteries, mostly, that go into everything from laptops to cars to phones to whatever. So they're very well set up with an industry on that front. You know, we don't make any batteries in the EU, really, do we, comparatively speaking? And then the other thing is, how much does it cost to make a battery in the EU compared to, or in the UK compared to China, or a car for that matter? You know, and it's not just electric cars, is it? Petrol Chinese cars are much, much cheaper to produce than a petrol European car equivalent. That's just a fact of life, because of the cost of labor and the cost of parts and stuff. The whole thing is much cheaper, isn't it? So there's a huge battle raging between the EU and China, and it'll be very interesting to see what comes out of this. But as aside from all this, we've also got an enormous problem of, if we are to decarbonize by 2035, whatever it is, there's no way that European automakers can get enough cars off production lines for us to do this. And arguably, no consumers can afford them in the first place. The reason Chinese cars are becoming so popular is because they are affordable. If you look at the MG4 and so on, people aren't necessarily just buying those because it's a good car, because it is. But the equivalent from, let's say, Stellantis is far, far more expensive. So you've got two different things going on at once. One is, we don't want to ruin our car industry. And the other is, we do need to decarbonize and hit this target. So
the thing with this for me, John, is it's that the EU has suddenly woken up and realized that China is going to come along and
it's a bit late, isn't it?
Yeah, and eat their automotive industry's dinner. I mean, they are absolutely taken over with their new car launches here. We're seeing loads of them in the UK, and we're seeing loads of them across Europe. And I think this is just the EU suddenly realizing that they need to do something if they're going to give their automotive industry a competitive chance. The other thing that slightly made me chuckle in this is you took a comment from the China's Ministry of Commerce there, didn't you? But the other one was, China will pay close attention to the EU's protectionist tendencies and follow up actions. And we know what that means, don't we? They will listen to their phones.
Sorry, that took me a minute.
It took a while very to good. Land, didn't it?
Very good.
But yes, no, an interesting story, that one, John. Let me move us on to one of mine. And I'm going to do another one of these stories that also made me chuckle. It's another used car dealer and another one of our stories that was very popular this week. And this is the Kent used car dealer that had his Fiat 500 clamped by the DVLA despite it being parked on his own land. So
I noticed I've got the serious stories and you've got the whimsical ones this week.
I have, but I have got some serious stories, but these were the ones that made me chuckle. And I just thought, okay, well, I'm going to start with those because it's right. News. So staff at the Strood Motor Centre thought someone was playing a practical joke on them when they arrived at work to find the Fiat 500 with a clamp attached, wrote our Jack Williams earlier this week. He said the vehicle was parked just outside the showroom on land owned by the business, along with several other cars for sale, none of which had been targeted by the DVLA. However, it soon transpired that the clamp was actually real rather than made of chocolate and had been put on the car by the DVLA. So when to make matters worse, the dealership actually had a buyer lined up for the car, was able to complete the sale because the car was immobilized by said clamp. As you can imagine, they weren't very happy about this. They rang the DVLA, who actually said to them that they had to prove that they owned the land in question. They said that they were guilty until proven innocent, which is like, I'm not sure that's how it works, DVLA, but apparently that's what they said. But we had a nice follow-up story to this later in the week that they did actually have the clamp removed. And they did manage to sell the car to that customer who came a day later. But I just thought this was absolutely brilliant. You can imagine people turning up thinking, hang on a minute, that's the rivals from down the road, isn't it? They've put a clamp on our car. They knew that we had a lead on that, but it wasn't. It was actually the DVLA who were angry with them.
But that's got to be the dealership opposite, hasn't it? They've seen one of their customers go over and have a look.
It's got to be.
We'll report that. That's our land.
Maybe we could start selling these fake clamps online with DVLA written on them just for practical jokes at dealerships.
Mm.
Sure, they go very well along with that line of kazoos that John Hanlon was going to buy. Available in the Car Dealer podcast shop very soon.
I've got a job lot of those in my garage, but we've stopped talking about them. So they're sort of
for now.
Going
for
now.
Right, back to you, John.
Okay, back to another serious story.
Oh, dear.
I know, I'm sorry. On to the car subscription service, which was purely electric cars, has properly gone into administration now. I mean, we talked about this 2 weeks ago, something like that, and it was not looking particularly good because no more funding was being released or words to that effect. So they have now failed to secure extra cash from shareholders and they've gone into administration. So not very good news on that front. You can sort of imagine the situations that led to this because things are very difficult for anyone financing cars, let alone electric cars at this point. So they had quite a lot of, I would imagine, electric cars on their books that they bought at quite a reasonable list price, which are now worth nowhere near what probably the balloon payment or however it works suggested it was. Also, demand for electric cars has fallen dramatically, hasn't it, in terms of people actually wanting to drive around in the first place. So I imagine possibly they were slightly struggling to actually get any customers. But it's sad news for anyone who works there. And we've been contacted by multiple people saying that they were effectively laid off almost immediately with not the most sugar-coated redundancy email. So it's something, I think some people have said it's about 50% of their staff have gone already. But it's not great news, but you sort of, unfortunately, you could see it coming, couldn't you? I mean, yeah. Say, we did talk about it 2 weeks ago. And I think for me, not to speak, don't want to speak ill of the dead company, so to speak, but I can't see these car subscription things working, really. A lot of places have put them into practice in place, but whenever I look at them, I think they are incredibly expensive for the actual consumer. You're paying a lot of money for a flexibility of being able to hand your car back after 2 months, aren't you? And I would be surprised if most people don't look at it and think, this is twice the price of a PCP per month. I can't quite justify that just to be able to get out of it in 3 months. What did you think, James?
Well, the thing that really struck me about this story is the fact that it is a direct casualty of the fall in EV prices, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they've clearly labelled that as the issue. legal in general said they wouldn't be given any rescue cash, which is what pushed them into administration. They legal in general put 22.5 million into the company over the previous couple of months in a hope to prop up that business. But as those EV prices have tumbled further, and I mean, we covered this last week, some of them have dropped 50%. Then, and nobody saw that coming in the last 9 months. I mean, it just came out of nowhere and has hit the industry very hard. And this is a business that was, its entire fleet was electric cars. So, you know, even if it had been cautious, ultra cautious, say, on its future values of these vehicles, it was never going to be.
You wouldn't see that coming, would you? The drops that have happened.
No. So I can see how it happened. I think it was a nice idea. And actually, we tested it, didn't we? Rebecca used it for a little while. And at the time, it was innovative and a nice way of doing things. And if it was cheaper, I could see it working. I really do get your point. It is too expensive. So if these sort of schemes are going to work, they need to be cheaper.
Mm. Yeah.
Steve, what did you think about this? I mean, do you think car leasing in this sort of fashion, this sort of kind of long term hiring, really could work or could ever work, or is it just a bit of a phase that we won't see any more of?
Well, I'll never say never. I think first thing is, you know, it's not nice, is it, when other companies, people get made redundant, lose their jobs. So that's not good. It's happened to me. It's happened to a lot of people. But I never say, I'm always wary when I can say no, and it's never going to happen in the motor industry, because there's been so many times I've been proved completely wrong. I think what's been known in the motor industry is a lot of the time the initial disruptors suffer. And then there might be a company that comes through later on, takes the idea and does it more profitably and slightly better. So I would never say never. But yeah, at the moment, I can't see it happening. I don't know who the market particularly is for that sort of thing.
I'm just looking back at one of the older stories that we'd linked to in this piece, and it wasn't written actually that long ago. It was at a time when it was in March of last year, so a little while ago. But they'd just taken on 700 Vauxhalls, all EVs, and at that time they said they had 5,500 active subscribers to the scheme, which is pretty impressive, isn't it? That's a big fleet of cars, and you can see why it was painful when those values started going down.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Shall I move us on?
Go on.
Okay, I will. Shall I go with a? No, I'm not. I'm going to go with a story that we published today, which was about supercar prices and how the cost of living crisis is even hitting supercar dealers. As prices of these cars start to tumble and those interest rate rises are really starting to bite. Those interest rates, in particular, the people that we spoke to for this piece said have really hurt deals, because they do have a big impact on those higher prices. They really do push those payments up. And the other thing that we've seen in this market is the future values of these cars are not quite as strong. There was a time when people were paying over list price. I mean, we say in this article, we were chatting to Romans, Tom Giaconelli tells us that last summer people were paying £40,000 to £50,000 over list for a Porsche 992 Turbo S. Well, that's simply not happening now. So those future values of these cars have come down, making the cost a lot higher. There's some interesting comments in here. We talked to the regulars. There's Amari Supercars in there, Romans International, Tom Hartley, all giving us comments, but also some nice data from Brago, the used car valuation firm, as well as CapHBI. And the CapHBI gave us the biggest fallers of the last year. So at number one is the Aston Martin DBS convertible, down 9.2% or nearly £15,000. You've got three Ferraris in there. You've got another Aston Martin and several McLarens that have all dropped considerably in the last year. But these supercar dealers also told us that actually at the real top end of the market, people buying LaFerraris and Bugattis, unsurprisingly, they haven't been hit by the cost of living crisis, and they're still buying. But a nice piece there that gives a real interesting look from across the industry, across the supercar industry in particular, on what's actually happening with those prices. What did you think of that one, John?
Yeah, a couple of things. I sort of wasn't surprised to read that it hasn't affected the really high, really, really high earners. I mean, there's two sorts of customers, aren't there, in a way? There's people that can, as Amari said in there, can just about afford it. So people with enough cash to go and finance themselves a Ferrari or whatever, but not necessarily go out and outright buy one. And then you get, so it's affected those people because, as you say, the interest rates have risen so dramatically. What it hasn't affected quite so much are the people that perhaps would have financed them but could definitely afford to buy it outright. And they have just gone, don't really like the look of that finance. I'll just have the whole thing outright. So they've just taken the entire car at list price, not list price, paid cash for it and accepted that. And then the other thing I thought was quite interesting is this list from CapHBI. I was expecting enormous drops. I mean, okay, 9.2% down for a DBS convertible, 14,900 is quite a lot of money to lose in a year. But most of these are quite minor adjustments down, aren't they? If you look at, you know, number 9, number 10, 1.7% down, 1.6% down. You're talking about $3,000, $2,000 on a McLaren 720S. That's not bad going, really, if you've lost $2,000 in a year.
I agree with you there, John, because I looked at that. I saw that this morning. And I think, obviously, the 9.2%, fair enough. But the other ones, I thought, well, that's normal, isn't it? We're back in the real world, aren't we?
That's right. Yeah. Just realised it is actually a car and not a gold bar or something. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
The other thing on this that struck me is I can't help thinking there's a little bit of a blip at the moment that will come back. I mean, there's still a big shortage of this stock out there, used car stock out there. And as we get closer to that 2030 ban, I can't help thinking that these last in the line supercars will start edging up a little bit in price again as people think, well, actually, no, I really did want one of those and I do really want it. So I think they'll find a level, but I don't think they're going to absolutely plummet. I think for some of these cars, where they really are genuinely the last in the line and these manufacturers are moving towards electric and hybrid models, they'll probably start going up in value. Mm-hmm. But that's my opinion, and I'm not a professional, so please don't go out and buy on my advice. Thank you. Disclaimer.
Tip there from James.
Thank you. Over to you, John.
Okay. I'm sort of running out of stories here. I will throw in one of our classic lists of cars that make dealers the most money. So this is data from somebody, Dealer Auction.
Dealer Auction.
And this is the latest data for August. And would you believe Land Rover is still top of the pile for profit margin? So it's the Evoque and the Discovery Sport that have been making dealers the most money, according to Dealer Auction. So Range Rover Evoque, on average, £4,130 profit. Discovery Sport, £4,120. Basically the same amount. Third, oddly, Mitsubishi Outlander. Apparently that's a car that's in demand. Who knew? Volvo XC60, Mazda CX-5, Mercedes A-Class, 3 Series, C-Class, 1 Series, Hyundai Tucson and BMW X1. So a lot of crossovers in there. I'm sort of the Outlander's a bit peculiar, but the rest of these are all quite usual, aren't they? You usually see the Mazda CX-5 in there. I've never quite understood how people manage to make so much money on Mazda CX-5s, but there we are. I can understand Range Rovers and such because it's a very desirable car for a lot of people.
I know it's been pointed out before when we've done a list like this before, but as I posted this on social media, there were more than one comment from people that came back and said, I would love to see what the bounce back rates are for those Land Rover Discoveries and Range Rover Evoques, and whether the profit margin actually holds up over time after they've had to fix it several weeks down the line.
Well, there is that, but the other factor is it might be stolen before anything goes wrong with it anyway. So.
Yeah, that is true. Well, John, I have got one more story because you've stolen a couple of mine, but I'm going to, like you have done, I'm going to combine two. And these are my serious ones of the week. And these are the Sherwood's results and Peter Vardy results. So these are the, both those businesses' accounts for 2022. Both showing quite considerable drop in profit. Sherwood's dropped 42% on the year previously, and Peter Vardy dropped 46%. But they both had rather different reasons for the fall. And we've talked a lot about results over the last few weeks as they're starting to trickle through as the deadline approaches for those year ends at December 31st. And there've been a real mixed bag this year. There's been some businesses that have done really well, and some like Sherwood's and Peter Vardy that have obviously struggled, you know, not far off half in their profits. I mean, we're still talking a reasonable amount of money for Peter Vardy Group. They made £4.8 million in the year to December the 31st, 2022. Not to be sniffed at. I'm sure Peter Vardy will not be too upset with that. But Sherwood saw quite a drop. They were down from 1.38 million in the 12 months before to £804,000. And they blamed their falls on a number of different things. Stuff like use new car stock shortage, which we've talked about at length before. Changes in the Stellantis systems. I mean, that's quite a stab at the manufacturer, isn't it? The war in Ukraine and the inflationary pressures on utilities are like pushing their costs up. But so quite a wide range of reasons there that they saw their profit fall. Peter Vardy, meanwhile, lays the blame firmly at the door of a lack of used car supply. We've talked about that on the podcast, haven't we, before, where he's had to shut those two used car dealerships that he had and put in some franchise dealerships instead because he's really struggle getting hold of that used car stock supply that he needs to fuel his business, and he's laid the blame on his results firmly at the door of that. So I just thought it was interesting the fact that we've got two results coming this week, both showing very, very similar drops in profit, 42%, 46%, but for very different reasons. And I think as the next few weeks pan out and we see a few more of these results come in, it'll be interesting to read how those dealers have done and whether they're blaming similar things as well.
What do you think in particular is the Stellantis systems that are to blame for this?
And we've done a lot of Stellantis bashing, haven't we, over the last few months? And I think probably rightly so. I mean, most dealers that I speak to that represent Stellantis brands don't have many good things to say about the way that they've been treated over the last few months. And I just think these sort of digs in the accounts in official documents are quite telling, because if that's what they've put in, I'm sure there was a lot of swear words in the boardroom about it.
What do you think? I worked for Vauxhall for 10 years and I left just as Stellantis came in. So it sounds like I might have made quite a smart decision then.
Yes, left at the right time. Well, that's my full set, John.
I am also out of stories. So I suppose it's time to ask, well, not quite for the verdict, but are there any stories, Steve, you think we've missed this week?
I don't think there's any stories that you have missed this week. I think what's interesting there is that people, a lot of dealerships there seem to have stock problems. So that's always good. Drop me an email, give me a call, the plug.
Synergies. I like it. Well done.
One thing I will say is I really enjoyed, and I saw the Fiat 500 getting clamped story. I thought it was hilarious. So I used to, one of my first ever jobs in management in the motor dealer, we had a huge dealer in Knaresborough. We had about, I had 10 or 12 sales guys working for me. And we decided, it was one rainy Tuesday morning or something like that. And I thought, you know what, this would be great. Assert my authority here. Let's have a full pitch move around. So we went out into the road, had a full forecourt move around. As what always happens there is, so out of the 12 salespeople, I think three then miraculously had handovers. Another five needed to do the prospecting. Any sales managers out there who want to get the team to prospect, all you need to do is do a full pitch walk around on Wednesday morning. They'll soon get on the phones. But we went out and there was me, there was three other guys, and I'm moving these cars around. And we were right at the end of a retail park, like right at the bottom end of the retail park. So on the main on the road outside, we thought, I'm just going to move these cars. We'll put them at the end of that road, and then it means we can move the other ones back on. So as we're going in and out, moving these cars around, well, then the heavens absolutely opened. So we all ran inside for half an hour just to wait for it to clear up a little bit. Yeah, I've gone out. As we re-emerged, the six or seven cars that we parked at the end of this road, I just noticed the traffic warden van pull up outside. And he'd seen these six cars. I don't know who'd spotted them. And we'd only been gone half an hour. And he'd put a ticket on three or four of them before we managed to get there. Absolute nightmare, absolute shocker. And then trying to explain that to our divisional director in the next B&L meeting wasn't the best, best start.
Did the sales team from that day on always just say to you, well, we can't do it, boss. We can't move the cars around because we will get tickets. So we're going to have to stay inside.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It did. It took me a long time to live that one down. I don't know if I yet have.
Oh, dear.
Well, at least they weren't clamped. That's there the only positive there. So I'm going to have to ask you, who do you think is the winner?
Well, I'm going to say it's between two, and it's whether I go serious or whether I go less serious. I think the London stock to Ukraine is a great, great story. I think that's definitely something that is great to be aware of. But favourite story this week, I'm going to have to give it to James with the with the car dealer that caught him on the beach holiday. That's tickled me.
It tickled me. Oh, thank you. Back with a win. Thank you so much, Steve. Much appreciated.
No problem.
I'll graciously admit defeat there, because that was a very amusing story. Not very amusing for him, but yes, excellent story. Well done, James.
I'm sure there's a lot to unravel in that story. Yeah. There's a lot to unravel there, isn't there?
Definitely.
Yes, certainly.
John, can I just say one thing before we go? Well, I've just got a little plug. The latest digital magazine of Car Dealer is out today on the website, which is packed with lots of very interesting things. Batch has done a very interesting feature on a Mazda museum that Emil Frey, the dealer group, owns, with lots of lovely pictures of Batch looking ridiculous. So please go over and have a look.
Looking ridiculous in Germany, which is a change.
Yeah, he's trying to look very, very seriously at Mazdas, which he's done very well. But there's lots of other good stuff in there, and a brilliant Big Mike column, which made me laugh a lot. So please go and have a look at that on our website.
Good plug there, James.
Thank you.
All that's left for me to say is thank you to Steve for judging today. It's been great to have you on, and all the best with the business. I'm sure we'll speak again very soon.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys for inviting me on. And like I say, anyone needs to get in touch, steve@flipstockuk.com. You can drop me an email or just go to our website, and it's got the phone number and all the contact details on there. So thanks again for inviting me on. Really enjoyed it.
No problem.
Plug in there. And now, thank you as well to James for competing.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. So make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you're listening on Spotify, don't forget you can swipe up now and vote on who you think won. If you want to check out the stories we've mentioned today, you can click the links in the show notes below or head to cardealermagazine.co.uk. Thanks again. And until next time, goodbye.